How are we doing? Are we covering? I know we're covering.
Well, I don't know what particularly you've had some questions to get me off the track here.
No, I'm doing my job.
This Brothers of the War and I set up the schools. I saw the way that they got the equipment for the laboratories and so on. Then I was transferred to Navy Yard, Boston, as a 20th officer of the yard, in charge of the installation and the testing of electronic equipment. And got involved adding equipment to ships as the new units or the additional units came on. And this is always a great me because I still to this day don't see how it made any sense. The Navy has contracted for certain cruisers to be built on the Florida or Massachusetts. So they built them. They're delivered. It's out Boston. And as soon as they get tied up, we're going to rip up all the communication equipment, most of the cabling, and start redoing the whole thing all over again. And I said, why don't you pay him the full price and tell him to live it off? We don't have to pay it off. Oh, you can't do that because of the contract.
What are you doing?
Talking bureaucratic, going down. Well, anyway, that was the work I was in there. And then, toward the end of the war, out and transferred to the 20th officer of the 10th Naval District, headquarters of San Juan, Puerto Rico, Puerto Rico, Guantanamo, Cuba. The Aruba Curacao, we had stations there. And the city of Brazil. So that area I had charge of for the technical side, not the communication, but that's somewhere else's. Mm-hmm. The man who had the communication, they also had the post office.
You had a full and interesting war service. Got out of the Navy, I guess, and came back here.
So the war was over. And I had the points, so I applied for a discharge, and I arrived home for just in time for Christmas, 1945.
Okay.
And I went on the payroll. I think they put me on the payroll at the university on the 15th of December, bless their hearts. So, of course, I started teaching as soon as the semester started. And then in a couple of months I got promoted to full professor. And then one came the following fall and the old thing just blew.
All the better.
Instead of graduating 10, 12, 14 a year, I all of a sudden were graduating 150 and more per year. And of course, one interesting thing about the old days, though, was this. I remember that I came here at the height of the Depression. The crash was 1929, but it did not hit the electrical industry for about a year and a half, almost 2 years. So when I came here, it was really
the peak of it.
Mm-hmm. And finding jobs for graduates or something else. Fortunately, we established contact with two government agencies, the REA and Federal Communications Commission. So with REA, we furnished them with the power people, and the Federal Communications Commission, furnished them with the electronic people, so our people got jobs during the Depression. we did not have any anybody looking at him the job, and there's a interesting story I tell this because it's one of the kind of happy memories and also sad memories, but we're in the second semester, and this is the senior class, and they were to take the final examination on that particular Saturday. We went to school, you know, 6 days a week, and had that on Saturday. And so this young man, John Hayes, came to me and he said, "Bro, I can't take the exam tomorrow." I said, "John, why? You know the rules." "Well," I said, "Bro, I'll tell you. I just got a lead that there's an opening down at Orlando Utilities, and they're looking for a man, and I made an appointment to be interviewed tomorrow, and I think that's important enough." I said, "Johnny, sure is. But when are you coming back?" He says, "I'll come back as soon as the interview is over." I said, "Well, what do you think?" And he said, "Oh, around noon, maybe 1 o'clock tomorrow." I said, "Okay. I'll tell you what. You come to the house," of course, we have finished the final day at the university. "You come to the house, and I'll give you the test there. And Saturday came, noon came, very shortly after that, around 1 o'clock. So in comes John Hayes. I said, "All right, John, here's bearing on the table. Here are the questions." And Ms. Sasha and I are going out. So if we don't get back in time, we just call your paper, written by your own table. But you know the rules. 3 hours. So we may get back by 4, we may not. Well, we got back about, must have been 3 o'clock. And there was no dry hand, pen. But the paper was in the dining table. And here's a note. "Dear Prof, I worked 8 of the 10 questions. I'm sure I got them all okay. I could have worked the other 2. But, Prof, I got a date with a red head up in Live Oak, and I'm going." See you, Prof. And he did. He had a question. They got 80. His other grade was B, so he got a B. He could have made an A, but John Hay was not interested in A, B, or C. He has interest in learning. He had the grade to tell him how to do. Well, this was the sort of a happy side of it. Later, John Hay got a job with REA in Washington, and our enterprising Florida kids, when they got there, the Depression, remember, they decided they'll form a cooperative. They rent a house, hire a housekeeper, and started living together. And they call it the hysteresis loop. You know what the hysteresis loop is?
No. Okay.
Well, if you have a magnetic material here, they start to magnetize it. The magnetization goes like this. And, of course, it repeats itself.
Okay.
And this is known as the hysteresis loop. So, there it was. And anyway, but even in REA, things were getting tough. So, John Hay, who tried to get a commission, he couldn't, but he came to work for me in the Navy Department as a civilian. But after a while, we managed to get him a commission, a second Lee on the Signal Corps. I wish he hadn't, but anyway, it sounded fine at the time. The trouble with John, he couldn't can get a commission before. He has, I think he had on a wage of 10-10 or even worse than that. But we're reaching desperation in those days, so this all business 2020 was out of the window, because all we wanted is somebody who can do the job. If he has to wear lenses this thick, okay. So they sent him over to called the pre-radar school at Harvard. And I used to go there all the time, to Harvard pre-radar school and to the MIT radar school, because I was not only monitoring them, but also I was also flying equipment. And so John was there, and oh, he was, I mean, outgoing, this full of life guy, and he loved living, learning life, and dedicated in his work too. Well, anyway, he got caught in what is known as the coconut grove fire.
Yeah.
Was, have you heard of it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, well, he got caught in there and got out with his date. And then somebody said, well, so-and-so in our party and got out. And John said, well, I'll go and drag him out. Well, he did. They dragged him out, all right. The next thing, he was overcome, so they took him to the Harvard Medical Center. And after this thing happened, we were still in Washington then, I picked up the paper, and there was a story on the front page, and list of the identified dead and all that, and I said, oh my God. I hope the general is there. And down the list, John Denton's name was not on. And it is the next day when they supplied the corrected list, that a complete list that John Denton was dead. So the next time I was up there, I asked Colonel whatever his name was the director of the school. I said, what in the world happened? He said, well, when he went the second time, he inhaled so much more of this vile smoke, which was plastic or whatever, I don't know, the material was, the draperies had been treated or something. You know, it was really toxic. And he said, he got out, and it was all right, appeared all right. Took him to the hospital, was checked out. It was okay, he just wanted to, you know, recuperate a little bit. But he said he was not under intensive care, and he said, next time we'll look in there. Then we're there. He finally, the aftershock.
That's too bad.
Well, my experience, I mean, his history over here, in addition to the other things, has been a tremendous satisfaction of the young man that had gone through and had done very, very, very well.
I think that's one of the great things of teaching is and, seeing your students.
Even to this day,
going out and
I get, we don't write, except at Christmas, I get 50 or 60 cards from former. Students, prof likes you to know how we're doing, here are the kids, they can send me pictures of their kids and all that sort of stuff. I know they'll be happy to know that we're doing very, very well. And so it's been that kind of tremendous experience, and some have gone long ways. Another very interesting case is a young man by the name of Yeomans. You know, just like Yeoman in the Navy.
Yeomans.
He had graduated, and I hadn't heard anything from him. I didn't even know where he was. I got a letter one day. It said, dear Prof, I've been thinking about writing you, but I didn't get around to it, so I'm writing now. He said, I am with Gulf Power. He said, I remember in your electronics classes, you usually used to say, "Now listen, fellows. There may be glamour in electronics, but there's also glamour in other kinds of work." And I said, "You cannot operate electronic equipment without power, so some of you may wish to take a look at the power field." So he said, "I don't want to leave Florida. I can find an electronic job in Florida, so I took a job. So far, I'm doing very well." And he got to be way up there. Administration, I don't know exactly what his position was. He was instrumental in getting this $30,000 from the power companies to fund the so-called energy option here in the department now. And we had many of this, you know, young people. Nobody got to be president of the United States, but they've done exceptionally well.
You've had a very full and varied career, very rewarding career. Anything you would change, you think, if you had to do it all over again, besides perhaps taking out a patent on radar?
No, I wouldn't change it. The only thing, the only regret that I have is that things are probably beginning to level off now. But when the war was over, and we got this tremendous increase in students, of course we had tremendous increase in faculty, and of course then Grinder and Dr. Miller thought that you shouldn't hire anybody unless it's a PhD degree, see? Fine and dandy, but in those days, you see, the only way you can get a PhD degree in a hurry is to be strictly theoretical. If you have to do any experimental work for a dissertation, you just plain out of luck, because it will take 2-3 years or more to complete it. So I got these people, and they were, I don't want to use the word carpetbaggers, because it was not quite it, but
I know what you mean.
The young people are, you know, I'm better than you and that sort of thing, and that's a good thing, good trade, except for one thing, that you can overdo it. And so the first thing they did when they got here, they started throwing all the equipment out of the laboratories and out of all the research and everything else. Because anything that has smack on hardware, they call it with derision, it was getting your hands dirty, and that was not fit occupation for an electrical engineer. Electrical engineer was somebody that keep your hands clean, and the technician did the dirty work, see? Where they got the idea, I don't know, but they got it, see? Yeah. So that caused us a little problem, but now the thing is going to
bounce
back, and mainly because they're discovering that the bonanza is just about gone, that there's thousands and thousands of dollars that are floating around in currency that is not there anymore. And you have to get down to brass tacks, not only that you have to do some teaching, but also you have to start teaching the kids so they can go out and get a job. And just purely theoretical stuff is not as inviting, because other people have muscled in, you know. I think they're probably just as many physicists and mathematicians call themselves electrical engineers now.
Right.
As electrical engineers, well, our new dean, Wayne Chan, he's a mathematician.
Yeah. And so many areas of electrical engineering, like computers,
that's
you
right.
know, that people...
That's right. Well, but there are two things, and even in computers, I say now there is room for lots of people. Mm-hmm. And let's not narrow ourselves down to just one thing, because this field is liable to get clogged up here very sharply. I don't care if it's a computer or a television receiver or what. Somebody has to do some research on some new wrinkle. somebody may be involved some new mathematical model so you can do it easier or better. But then somebody has to design the doggone thing so it could become a product to be sold. And then you got to have people to do this, to see that it's properly serviced. And I don't necessarily mean that the people that have the servicemen. I mean the factories, the manufacturers, have people to go out and see that their equipment is properly serviced. If it doesn't, they're in trouble too, see? And, of course, when you get to larger equipment, of course, you have to see some people that see that it's properly installed. And then eventually, not eventually, but there are other people who have to go and sell this stuff.
Right.
Should be technical enough to know what they are talking about, but sell it. So there's room for all these people.
Everyone stands on everyone else's shoulders.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
So I remember with sadness that we were having a meeting at the college faculty one day, and when the not-so-bright assistant didn't get up, he said, well, he said, we must realize now that there is no such thing anymore as a television engineer and a railroad engineer. I said, Lord Almighty, where has this guy been? How in the world do you run the railroads? And I don't mean the guy in the locomotive, I mean the guy that... handled the technical side of it, although the railroads are not a good example anymore now, trouble therein. But in television, he thought that we have a television set now, there is no more engineering. And because that idea prevailed for a while, the Japanese practically ran away with the business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they own
this piece.
They own Quasar, you know, they both bought out Motorola. And they come with new wrinkles because they put engineers to work on new ideas, new development, better equipment, more compact equipment, so engineering and stuff. But we have to live with all this thing because...
It's like this built-in mic there. Most American cassettes, recorders still have the mic. So.
Well, I was going to say where the mic is in this.
Yeah.
Is this a Sony or not?
Yeah, this is a Sony. Yeah.
Well, this is the thing, and this is one of the sad, as I said, it's been a great elation as far as I'm concerned, being at the university. Very great deal of satisfaction. And I had, of course, other interests. Now, we mentioned Dr. Tigard, and so I can do a little bragging. But after Dr. Tiger got to know me, and in those days, you see, we knew everybody. I knew everybody on the faculty. I knew all kinds of students, not only my department, but all over the campus. And after he got to know me, he'll go up, and he's a great big guy. Virgil, what are you doing tonight? I said, Dr. Tiger, I'm not doing anything. Why? I'm coming over there and chat with you for a while. So he comes over the house. And what do we chat about? The university? No. Electrical engineering? No. Chat about international things? About literature? Mm-hmm. Like that. So I say I didn't blow my horn a little bit. Nobody blows it for me.
He's a bell.
He went around town and told people that, you know what, one of the best educated members of my faculty is that Sasha Power Electrical Engineering. And that's another thing I've been interested in.
He was aiming for somewhat of a Renaissance man. You know, of course you could never attain that, but I think Dr. Tiger was hoping with the General College, to get something.
No, the idea is still wonderful, and I've been very much interested in the latest support about the new college down at Sarasota. You read the
yes.
Support. You know who started it?
No.
Assistant business manager here.
I imagine Florida is going to be like the University of California system before too long. You know, the various colleges and universities throughout the state will all come under.
Well, this is another thing, but to finish the story about Dr. Titus and a little bit about Sasha, I used to be a lecturer on international relations. And I don't know whether I have to mention but that's put it this way. My friends, and they're my friends, are political science. They used to get so provoked. They say, my God,
I can't understand.
International relations. I said, well, I probably know a few things more than you do. I've been practically all over Europe. I've seen a few things. I read up all the time. And I've been invited time and time again to join the American Platform Association with Lowell Thomas, the president. But I said, no, I just enjoy it. I have certain information. If people ask me to speak, I'll be glad to. And I've spoken all over Florida and city clubs, places. I never did write. I didn't ever pretend to be that much of an expert to write, you know, learned paper on international relations, but you know, you also need the other guy that can interpret certain affairs to the Rotarians, to the Lions, to the Calvinians, to the Vedic Literary Society that meets on Thursday instead of Friday, and all this. I mean, the everyday folks that really need and should have some information.
That's so rare nowadays. It's a person has so many well-rounded interests. You know, they expect people to have.
Well, I love music, but I am not musical. I had a friend with a top-notch industrial chemist and outstanding cello player used to say, Steve, he said, you could not carry a tune if somebody gave it to you in a basket. I said, that's right, man. That's right.
But
I love music. I
still enjoy it.
In the old days, of course, I loved the theater and all that sort of stuff. So I guess but I was brought up, you see, in what they call the liberal arts tradition through high school. I really didn't pick up in college. I picked up in high school, abroad. So that's how it came about.
It's a type of education that's becoming more and more rare, although I think they are coming back to a certain extent. Your liberal arts plus your specific interest.
Of course, the in European schools, you know, the teacher training institutes really mostly for grammar school teachers. If you're going to start at the high school, you see, you have to specialize in the area where you teach. Not to get a degree in education, but get a PhD in psychology or physics or mathematics or whatever it is. I went out of high school, Lord, this is in the 1916, 1917, 1918, you see, my professors of chemistry and psychology were PhDs from the European University. That is something, of course, we lost track of over here. They said, no, you don't have to know the subject, you know, all you have to know how to teach the subject.
Well,
big deal. Yeah. Anyway, I hope I'm not stepping too hard in terms of our friend already.
Education.
But I do think that if they go through there, they ought to go and specialize in there, and they shouldn't be shifted back and forth.
I think